Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. I am delighted to have Kit Klarenberg with us. And Kit is an investigative journalist exploring the role of intelligence services in shaping politics and perceptions, which is particularly relevant to this Keir Starmer story that the media have put a blackout on doing any kind of deep dive. We are wondering whether these toy boys are part of some YMCA-esque playground that Keir Starmer has been dipping his toes in, or are they some really inventive black ops people are trying to lean on Keir Starmer and compromise the UK government? So, without any further ado, when you saw this story breaking, and huge thank you for coming on, I mean, what was going through your head? I was like, this is bizarro land.
I mean, Bizarro Land's one word for it. I mean, I think Zoolander Part 3, you know, the Ben Stiller movie in which models are used for terrorism attacks, loomed large in my mind. This story, it started off weird and has gotten weirder and weirder in every conceivable regard. So on May 8th, a vehicle was set on fire in Kentish Town, that's northwest London. It was a Toyota, which was formerly owned by Keir Starmer and sold to a neighbour of his. There was another arson attack 3 days later at a property in Islington that Keir Starmer used to own, which has since been turned into flats. And then there was another arson attack, yet again in Kentish Town, at the former residence of Keir Starmer while he was a mere MP before becoming Prime Minister, which is now rented to his sister-in-law. And that was on May 12th. So within 4 days, you have three clearly targeted arson attacks, with the ultimate target being Keir Starmer. Now, in Parliament, initially, Starmer gave a statement on this, which got very little press coverage, which was the fires were an attack on all of us, on democracy and the values that we stand for, blah, blah, blah. It didn't really get very much in the way of media pickup because, I mean, who listens to what Keir Starmer has to say about anything, really? You know, that's kind of understandable. But the plot kept thickening because there was a stream of arrests of three different people who were, one way or another, the details remain unforthcoming, tied to this wave of arson attacks. All three of them were Ukrainians. At least two of them were models who had profiles on modeling websites, which I had the foresight to archive before they got inevitably deleted. This is while they're in police custody. So who did the deletion is up to our imagination. One of the arsonists or alleged conspirators in this was arrested at Luton trying to do a runner to Romania, which is a country which, of course, neighbours Ukraine and has been the site of some geopolitical conniving, to say the least, over the past year. Excuse me. Now, this kind of there was this flurry of reports about these arrests, but the media didn't seem overly interested. So you can find, say, on the Sun website, the Daily Mail website, articles about how, oh, well, this Ukrainian national has been arrested for in connection with these arson attacks, and there'll be like 100 words of text along with pictures and or videos of the blazes that they were one way or another responsible for setting, but not really any real context or speculation about who or what might be responsible or why they might have done this. This all changed on this past Sunday, which was the 25th, I believe, where in a remarkably concerted way, mainstream British publications, including the Financial Times and the Daily Mail and the Times, they all published lengthy articles suggesting that Russia might have been behind these arson attacks. Now, to take the FT piece as an example, and I think it is worth reading in full because it is very odd, is that its headline states, UK investigating possible Russian involvement in Starmer arson attacks. But then when you get into the details of this, after giving you that lead, it's like the FT is trying to hedge its bets and say, oh, well, don't actually read too much into the fact that the police are considering this. And it explicitly states that this is just one of many avenues that are being reported by the being investigated by the police. Nothing is being ruled out at this stage. The Ukrainian trio conspired, allegedly, with others unknown, and the reason for their conspiracy is unexplained. The FT also very bizarrely stated that, well, even if Russia or individuals tied to Russia were responsible for this somehow, that doesn't mean the Kremlin was implicated. Of course, you know, the headline is what people are going to remember, and it's going to stick in people's minds that, hey, Russia might probably did have something to do with this wave of arson attacks. But another very, very, very strange aspect of this that really has set my antenna going is there is a large number of people who are very loud online, on social media and in the traditional mainstream media, who, you know, they are Russia experts, quote unquote, or counter disinformation specialists, or just pure like Ukraine ultras, like people who support Kiev unquestioningly and indefatigably, who are usually very keen to blame Russia for everything and anything, including quite literally bad weather. But they are silent. Okay, they're completely silent. They haven't even posted about the news reports blaming Russia for this. To give you one example, Paul Mason, my old friend, he is a veteran British client journalist who I exposed in the summer of 2022 as being on the payroll and under the direction of British intelligence. He was getting given talking points to reiterate in public from his intelligence handlers. He was getting given lists of targets to go after, independent journalists and activists who oppose the NATO proxy war in Ukraine. Were in some cases, including my own employers, the Grey Zone, Paul Mason was cooking up plans to try and destroy the outlet via quote unquote full nuclear legal, and wanted our emails gone over and our text messages gone through to prove that we are working for foreign powers. We aren't, but you know, that's what he wanted to do. He has viciously attacked people for opposing further aid to Ukraine. He is again someone who is very quick to blame Russia for everything and anything. He is an OG Starmer supporter. He was a huge advocate for Starmer when Starmer was Brexit secretary in 2019, and was breathlessly supported his bid for the leadership and made all sorts of bizarre statements saying that if you don't think that Keir Starmer will advance the class struggle, you're not understanding social democracy from a Marxist perspective, and all of these other endorsements of Keir Starmer. Now, the mainstream media has claimed, on the basis, on the admitted basis of zero evidence, that Russia could, emphasis on could, have something to do with this, this wave of attacks on Paul Mason's personal hero. And he has said nothing about it, which is very, very, very weird. And it strongly suggests to me that this story is being stage managed. What information is being released is being heavily controlled. People like Paul Mason are being told not to go near it. And I strongly suspect that the kind of insertion of speculation into the public sphere that this, that Russia might have had something to do with this, was in response to widespread public speculation that Starmer may have had a personal relationship with one or some of these young, handsome Ukrainian boys. Because such was the media blackout on this, there was an enormous amount of conjecture and theorizing online as to who these people were and why they did what they did. And a recurrent suspicion was that maybe Keir Starmer might have owed them some money for services rendered. I mean, I myself am not drawing any conclusions. I think that there are a number of other alternative explanations for what happened and why, which we can get into. But it's a very striking feature that moving in lockstep, you have major agenda setting media outlets all come out with the same story, which basically states there's no evidence for it whatsoever, but it could have been Russia. And then the same braying mob of people who are only too happy to leap on events to attack Russia, blame Russia, they have had nothing to say about any of this. And it's, I'm sure I don't need to tell your viewers, but it does bear repeating that the level of control that British intelligence and its national security infrastructure maintains over what the media reports and how in Britain is absolutely massive. There is something known as the DSMA Committee, which is the Defence and Security Media Advisory Committee. They issue what are known as D notices, which means do not publish notices, and they routinely boast in their internal, their public records of their regular meetings with the heads of major newspapers and TV outlets that they've successfully suppressed this story, this information was trending and going viral on social media, and we told the mainstream outlets not to go near it, and they didn't. So if the British state wanted to shut down this story entirely, they could do it very easily. And they haven't done that, which is another kind of layer to the onion here. And it does raise the very obvious question of whether the British establishment does want this story in the public domain to a degree. Whether that, again, is to place pressure on Starmer, to raise uncomfortable questions for Starmer at a time when his popularity is, he's the least popular prime minister in history, having replaced the least popular prime minister in history. His government is, its polling is in the toilet. Nigel Farage's reform is now leading in most national polls. People are talking about Farage as the next prime minister. Labour just got wiped out in the local elections. And then against this backdrop, you also have Starmer, for many months, was talking about formal British deployment to Ukraine, and then backed off from that at the start of May, having initially claimed that he was ready to deploy British forces to on the ground to Ukraine to fight alongside Ukrainians and to deploy British jets to police the skies and shoot down Russian missiles. This all got dropped at the start of May, and there were a Ministry of Defence official claimed, "Oh, we were never planning to do this, and we always thought it was crazy." In direct contradiction of everything British officials have been saying for months prior to that point. You also have Lammy and Starmer making critical noises about the Gaza genocide and Israel's mass slaughter and torture of the Palestinians trapped there. Both of these geopolitical factors, or one independently of the other, could have influenced these attacks. There are some indications that at least one of the Ukrainians had some ties of an indeterminate kind to Israel. I don't know what to make of that, but the whole thing stinks to absolute high heaven. And yes, we are no closer to resolution on this almost a month later.
All right. Well, that was an excellent opening summary. And for people who've just tuned in, we've got over 1,000 watching live. We are with Kit Klarenberg, who specializes in exposing the role of intelligence in meddling in politics and the media. All of Kit's links are in the description box. I'm going to put them in the live chat now. We've got Kit on X. We've got Kit's website. We've got Kit's Buy Me a Coffee. So please,
thank you very much.
Please support his important work. There's not many people talking about this case. And if you've got a question for Kit while we're live, please put it in the chat. I see several have already come in. And we've got until 1:30 the hour before the next show. So please keep the questions and keep the support coming. You know, what immediately comes to mind, and it was one of the big questions asked by George Galloway, he was one of the first to report on this as well, was how on earth would these young lads know to target these two properties and this vehicle? And if you look at the history of how they are associated to Keir Starmer, it's not as straightforward as people would think. And, you know, some of these properties, the car, they go back certain years. The car was sold to a neighbor, etc. I mean, what kind of person would have that information to provide to these young lads? Or would these young lads No, because they had visited the properties and they would know because they've seen this car before?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, that is a very, very, I forgot to mention that. But it's like, yeah, that, like, I mean, how did they have this detailed, if outdated, information? That's not something that you could find out very easily, particularly when the person in question is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Now, somewhat relatedly, another kind of curious aspect of this is that these three Ukrainians who are being remanded in custody, and it seems that with uncharacteristic celerity, the British justice system is moving to prosecute them very, very, very quickly, perhaps in the hope that they can be jailed and forgotten about and silenced in the process. But they are being investigated by Britain's counter-terrorism directorate. However, they have been charged with criminal rather than national security offences. Now, this is interesting for several reasons. Number one, is that, well, you might imagine that a wave of targeted arson attacks directed at the Prime Minister would, by definition, be a national security matter. And we don't have to think very hard to imagine what the media and establishment response would have been to, say, three men from Pakistan targeting properties in a vehicle tied to Tony Blair. You know, we would see their faces plastered all over the news, speculation about their motives and their potential international connections. There's none of that. But on the subject of how they are being charged with criminal misconduct rather than breaching national security laws, I have written for the Grey Zone and the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, Craig Murray, has also written about this. Britain now has what's known as the National Security Act. It is a sweeping and terrifying bit of legislation, which its terms are so broad and vague that people will almost inevitably break the law without wanting to, intending to, knowing they have. So, for instance, just to give you an example, and I mean, it almost sounds like a joke and a not particularly funny one. Is that under the National Security Act, you can be arrested and prosecuted for taking photos of public buildings on the basis that doing so could amount to providing information useful to a hostile power. But they don't have to prove that you are doing so for a hostile power for you to be prosecuted under the under the Act. They don't need to prove that you have harmed Britain's national security for you to have committed a national security offence. They don't even need to define the term. It's whatever they say it is. So, I mean, I some of your viewers may be aware. I was stopped and detained for almost 7 hours the last time I returned to the UK and had my digital devices strip searched. I remain under investigation in the UK. I can't say that it's very high on my list of tourism destinations at the moment as a result. But you know, recently, there have been several prosecutions of alleged Iranian spies for taking photos of the headquarters of Iran International. Now, Iran International is probably one of the most dubious and shady media organizations in the entire world. Its funding is very opaque, although there are suggestions that it comes from Saudi Arabia. It publishes relentless negative stories about Iran. And yes, it has no apparent means of financial support. It's unclear who's paying their rent for their massive office in London, or who's paying their bills, because it certainly isn't, advertising revenue or readership donations. But there have been several people recently who've been arrested and in some cases successfully prosecuted for taking pictures of the Iran International building. Now, there was no evidence in any of these cases that they were doing so for Iran or any other power, but they still got clapped by the National Security Act because it's so broad and vague. So if the British state really wanted to throw these Ukrainians to the wolves, they could very easily hit them with any number of national security related charges. But no, they're just being charged with criminal arson, which has lesser penalties is less likely to result in bombshell disclosures in court. That's a very interesting feature and a suspicious one as well. And this also occurs, of course, against a backdrop of speculation about Keir Starmer's sexuality and his very close relationship with his clothes designer, who is a member of the House of Lords. All very, very, very murky.
So Lord Ali, what's his role in all of this? Isn't he associated with one of the properties that was attacked?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, he's the, Lord Waheed Ali has been embroiled in scandal after scandal related to Keir Starmer. He was Keir Starmer's chief campaign fundraiser. He's been a member of the House of Lords since 1998, and he was elevated by Tony Blair. He enjoys a very close personal relationship with Starmer, and some people have suggested that it goes deeper than mere friendship. But yes, that one of the properties was allegedly somewhere that Lord Ali liked to spend a lot of time. And he has also publicly commented on the attacks. So yeah, it's quite some mystery, which would be, you would think, clarified by disclosures by the police. But they are being very careful about what they release. To give you an example, the aforementioned Financial Times article, it stated, none of the Ukrainians are known to have any affinity or connection to Russia, and one of them posted pictures of the Ukrainian military. Where did they post it to? You know, what platform, my other things they have posted indicate why they might have done this, who they were conspiring with. Because, you know, allegedly this conspiracy is completely unexplained, but they're sure it's a conspiracy. You know, so the police in cases like this, as I say, are usually very, very keen to get the media on side with a particular narrative of who was responsible and why. And here they, to a degree, want to blame Russia, but they're also very quick to remind people that, well, actually, don't read too much into it. And this is just a working hypothesis. I mean, you know, when a teenager goes missing, say, all of their personal and familial associates become avenues of interest to the police. It doesn't mean that they did anything, or that they are in any way responsible. They just become of interest to the police. The police were very quick to stress, as I say, that a connection to Russia is just one theory, emphasis on theory, we're exploring among many, and we've ruled nothing out. And yet the entire media apparently randomly but simultaneously decided to front page this on the same day. Yes.
So apparently Starmer was living at one of Lord Ali's properties, and when he was questioned about it, he said it was to do with taking pressure off one of his kids because it was exam time. But when people researched it, the kid had already done his exams. What was going on? Why was Starmer really at Ali's property? Any idea on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, Lord Ali is openly gay, and there has been some rumor and innuendo about Starmer's sexuality and how real his much vaunted marriage is. So I mean, yes, and I think this is what has given rise to suggestions that Starmer may have had a relationship of some kind with these three Ukrainians. There was a video that did the rounds on TikTok that showed CCTV footage, which very much looked like Starmer and Lord Ali having a snog. Which has been did the rounds on X for quite some time and has since been buried. And it's not something that officials have commented on, despite the media taking an interest on this. Yes, Lord Ali has been Starmer's personal stylist and bought Starmer a large amount of clothes. Because that's just what you would do for a friend, I guess. I'm sure there's nothing suspicious behind that at all.
So, do you think that Starmer's wife is a beard, a la Hugh Edwards, Schofield, etc.?
Well, I mean, you know, stranger things have happened. I mean, you've got to bear in mind that, you know, Ed Miliband married his longtime partner. I think it was the second that he became leader of the opposition. It was within like a few days he married his longtime partner, and he claimed it had absolutely nothing to do with being elected leader, that it was just a coincidence. I mean, you know, we have had one prime minister in history, I think, Edward Heath, who hasn't been married, and of course rumors about his own sexuality and whether he may well have had a penchant for young boys have abounded ever since he took office in 1970, and they abound to this day. So I mean, it's not really the done thing in British politics to be a wifeless prime minister, let alone opposition leader. Likewise, you know, William Hague, who was married his secretary, I believe, while he was a minister, and then ended up, I believe, when he was not long after the Tories took office in 2010, it was found that he had, quote unquote, occasionally shared hotel rooms with his 25-year-old parliamentary special advisor, and this was to cut on costs, so they didn't have to get separate hotel rooms, which doesn't sound particularly convincing. I'm not making any concrete judgments around Starmer's love life, although I mean he is remarkable in terms of someone who appears to, I mean it's almost like he's from central casting in terms of his rather abrupt and quiet rise to power. There are very clear indications that he was being groomed from quite an early age to fulfill this role. Bizarrely, he ended up on the radar of the Czech intelligence services during the Cold War because he spent some time in what was then the Czech Republic, and it was assumed that he was working for British intelligence. I mean, I think this was in the, might have been the 1980s or earlier, but once he becomes the head of the Crown Prosecution Service, which is a huge part of his legend building and his mythos, it taught him the value of commitment to the public good and filled him with values of justice and fairness and blah and all this other rubbish. Actually, in reality, when he was running the CPS, he insulated Jimmy Savile from prosecution for serial paedophilia, despite the fact that there was overwhelming evidence. He let MI5 and MI6 off the hook for their involvement in torture, despite tens of thousands of pages of evidence being collected by the Metropolitan Police, senior MI5 and MI6 officials who were guilty as hell, were allowed to walk free at Starmer's express direction. It's clear that the CPS under his watch kept the persecution of Julian Assange going and the bogus rape charges in Sweden open against Assange, they were pressuring Swedish authorities not to drop the case so they could keep him in the suffering in the Ecuadorian embassy, and then suddenly all of the emails and the files related to Julian Assange get burned, as do all of the files in MI5 and MI6 and Jimmy Savile. He's someone who certainly has racked up quite a lot of debts to MI5 and MI6 over the course of his career. If we go with the entirely speculative theory that one way or another that these arson attacks were a warning shot or somehow a punishment for his recent moves on foreign policy, it could well be the spooks behind this.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Initial Quality Study Award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
Well said. You're so well researched, and you're filling in a lot of information we've been contemplating here. I just want to make it clear for the viewers, we're not knocking anyone's sexuality here.
No.
But if you're in power and your proclivities are making you vulnerable to being compromised, then that is a threat to national security, and it is indeed of huge public interest. And as we're seeing the cracks in Starmer's PR machine increase, widen in girth, thanks to these lads on the screen, what the situation here, and we've seen the media blackout, it's just completely arousing everybody's suspicion as to what the hell has gone on. Now, I know we've only got 25 minutes left, and there's tons of questions come in. I've still got tons of questions on my mind as well. But we've got almost 2,000 watching. We're here with Kit. And I'm going to put all of his links in the live chat again. His X, his website, his Buy Me a Coffee. And if you are watching it on replay, all of his links are in the description box. So let me have a look. Let me choose one of these questions for you. Sherry wants to know, if he's being compromised, why is he not being fired? And I would add to that, it's not easy to get rid of him, is it? He's quite entrenched.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think that the point is that people are compromised. So when they're in power, they can be lent on. This is quite an amazing story. But Cyril Smith, who was a Liberal MP during the, I think it was the 70s and the 80s, he was rather notorious for being kind of like orca whale fat. He was absolutely this kind of monster of a man. My dear mother, she worked in an advertising agency during the 1980s, and they wanted to use Cyril Smith in a marketing campaign for a weight loss product. And they got a knock on the door from Special Branch saying, don't use him. He's a paedophile. Don't go anywhere near him. Would never faced any consequences for this. He was never punished. After he died, there were glowing eulogies. And when allegations began to emerge that he'd been engaged in industrial scale paedophilia, the then Liberal leader, David Steele, said, oh, well, he just spanked a few bare bottoms. Compromising people is part of the reason that you keep them there. I mean, we look at what Jeffrey Epstein was doing. He was quite clearly collating video and other evidence on people within academia, technology, science, finance, business, politics, the world over. And then if they didn't toe the appropriate line from Israel's perspective, oh, well, we have you on tape raping a child. So you might want to think about how you vote or what you say or who you would award a government contract to or, you know, in future. Blackmail cuts both ways, if and when people become too much of a liability, as I think happened with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, they're thrown under the bus quite brutally. I mean, if you use again the Epstein case as an example, we know for a fact, as good as a fact, and we have some documents in the public domain, which conclusively and incontrovertibly proved that he was running an international sexual blackmail ring. And himself was a serial paedophile and sex abuser. He died, or did he, in extremely strange circumstances. Ghislaine Maxwell has been jailed for life in a maximum security prison, zero access to the outside world, all files related to her case sealed. The Virginia Roberts, who kind of broke the case on Epstein and specifically said many times, I am not depressed, I'm not suicidal, allegedly took her own life recently. This stuff can be swept under the rug very successfully, so he may well be kept as long as he's considered useful, but that utility is quite clearly running out, not least due to the fact that he's so unpopular, and he certainly will lose the next election if he's still leader.
We have to send you a copy of one of my books, Kit. Who Killed Epstein? Yeah. Prince Andrew or Bill Clinton?
I expect a signed one. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So Zoe wants to know, with these three young lads, why none of their family members or friends are being interviewed? If this was Trump, if Trump properties had been targeted, the news media would have profiled the suspects to high heaven. But we don't see the parents, the family members, school teachers, siblings, nothing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, this is another aspect of it, is that I think when the first Ukrainian got nicked, his dad was quoted in the media as saying, oh, well, he loves the UK, but not very much more than that. The media isn't digging into any of their associates, whether that's professional or otherwise. They're not doing the usual kind of, you could call it harassment that usually happens in cases like this. I mean, by contrast, there was some bullshit, completely false story that arose 2 years ago that China was running secret police stations in Western countries because Chinese-run businesses in Europe and America during COVID had in conjunction with the Chinese government opened kind of community centers for the local Chinese population to renew their driving licenses and passports, and this became a huge meme in the media that, oh, there are these secret Chinese police spying stations all over the Western world, and there was a Chinese business owner in Croydon who was interviewed by his local newspaper, and it said that he was accused of this falsely, and it said it had ruined his life with his children getting followed home from school. He was getting visited multiple times a day by quote unquote journalists. He was like he would leave his house and be immediately mobbed by reporters. There doesn't seem to be any effort going into this at all with these Ukrainian lads. Now, I mentioned earlier the deleted profile. Two of them at least had modeling profiles and other social media assets, which, you know, are what would, if it, when in cases they haven't been deleted, would be potentially sources of information on their associates. One of the accused opened a roofing company in March 2025. It wouldn't be too difficult to dig into their accounts, who set up the company, who the firms involved in doing this. Dig deeper. But none of that is going on. There is a very strict narrative which is being adhered to. And it's as if a very clear line in the sand has been drawn, you know, this far and no further.
Which just makes us all the more suspicious. So you've got a question from Dusty. How do people elected and appointed to positions of public trust end up being the source of insanity and seriously bad vibes? The entire thing is backwards, upside down, and utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I mean, but this is the thing, is that they are groomed for power because they're wrong men. Like, you know, I mean, it's like we see what happened with Jeremy Corbyn. Now, I mean, irrespective of what you think of Jeremy Corbyn as a person or his policies, I mean, that's kind of immaterial. The fact of the matter is that he was, you know, a very normal, very in some ways very dull guy who, you know, spent his Christmas days wrapping presents for orphans, volunteered for, you know, every local charity and cause going, and was a kind of unknown backbench MP who was propelled to national stardom by token of entryism and being elected Labour leader in 2015. And he was absolutely torn to pieces for it, you know. Like, it, such is the way that things are structured now, it is virtually impossible for anyone who is remotely normal or indeed non-compromised in some way to get into a position of any kind of influence within any aspect of the establishment. I mean, we see, excuse me, it's got to stop smoking. We see this everywhere, not just in politics, but, you know, in the media, like, you know, like mainstream journalists, you know, quote unquote journalists in Britain, you know, they all went to the same schools, they all went to the same universities, they all take the same line on everything. There are zero dissidents or muckrakers left, and in the event that you do step out of line, you're out of a job. Muckrakers of old, like John Pilger, when he very sadly passed away, I believe it was at the end of 2023, people were lining up, establishment journalists were lining up to take pot shots at him and effectively dance on his grave, you know, because he was actually a good, decent person. So, yeah, it's not just in politics where, you know, the worst imaginable kind of people end up in positions of power. And this is very much by design. It's not an accident.
So Kim has said a lot of Ukrainians don't like Starmer funding the war. The war could have been stopped over 2 years ago if Boris hadn't stopped the peace negotiations. Is this just Starmer continuing the meat grinder so BlackRock and the globalist banksters can continue to profit and they can get the interest on the $250 billion in Russian assets they've frozen?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is that what's quite interesting is that rhetorically, Keir Starmer has been much, much more all in on this than the Conservative government was. Even Boris Johnson, who, as Kim pointed out, personally sabotaged the peace talks in Istanbul in April 2022, I believe. But the fact is that actually he has sent Ukraine a lot less because Britain has basically disarmed itself, sending all of its equipment to Ukraine already. Britain is rather pathetically reduced to buying weapons from the US, which it then sends to Ukraine. There are two readings here, one of which is he's not doing enough. The other is Ukrainians are angry that he's trying to keep this going at all costs and they just want it over. I mean, in my my adopted home of Serbia, there is a large amount of Ukrainian refugees. They have been welcomed with open arms. They are very angry at Britain and the US for getting them into this. They can see very clearly the forces that triggered this war and the, you know, the actual economic and political and geopolitical interests behind it. That's certainly not a Russia sympathetic position, but they, you know, they understand that the end goal is reducing Ukraine to rubble with enough of its population left to work for subsistence wages for Western corporations, while BlackRock hoovers up all of their natural resources for profit while giving the locals a pittance. So there is anger at this continuing. Again, another potential explanation for this, which is nowhere in the media at all. Nowhere. George Orwell, that well-known British intelligence asset, used the analogy of the media moving as one without apparent orchestration, like a shoal of fish, you know, how they like change direction all at once. And it's like, yeah, this is what the media does. They went from not paying any attention to this to sudden intensive speculative focus to suddenly not caring and moving on and forgetting about it.
Yeah, I remember when Starmer was slobbering all over Biden to authorize the long-range missiles getting fired into Russia. And I think the misconception is it's a war between Russia and Ukraine. But Ukraine, in my opinion, has just been used as a blood sacrifice for the globalists to put their weapons in there and keep this going to destabilize Russia, because that's the great prize. I mean, if you look at the GDP of Russia and Ukraine, you know, Ukraine's a fraction of the GDP of Russia, and this war would never have been possible without the continued supply of weapons and intelligence by the CIA, the globalists, the Biden crime family, etc. And it's disgusting what's happened to the people of Ukraine, that the country has been used like this. All right, so next question is from Agent Orange. Was any of the suspects burned while lighting the vehicles? If not, that would be suspicious in itself. Do we know what was used as an accelerant in any of these fires?
You see, now this is another aspect of this which is very interesting, which is that the details of how these things were set on fire have not been released. So, I mean, we see the footage of a burning car, the alleged Toyota, which once belonged to Keir Starmer. How this was done, we don't know. It's not even been speculated. It's that zero details have been released. You know, I mean, you might think that they might mock up a picture, a shoddy Molotov cocktail knockoff to convince us that that was how it was done. No, none of this has been released at all. And I you know, given that, funnily enough, at the very start of the war in Ukraine, the Ukrainian public were encouraged to attack Russian vehicles, and instructions on making Molotov cocktails were circulated amongst the Ukrainian population. You can find a lot of videos of Ukrainians accidentally setting themselves on fire in attempting to attack Russian vehicles with Molotov cocktails. So, I mean, yes, either these people were extremely lucky not to have been burned. They had some practice somehow in conducting arson attacks, or they were just very lucky and, you know, emerged unscathed without any experience in it's of incendiary incendiary acts whatsoever, or something rather different happened here than we're being told. But again, it's all very, very murky, isn't it?
It is indeed, and it gets murky by the day. I mean, they're saying that there are still more co-conspirators out there. And, you know, we're expecting some mugshot of Gary Glitter to appear, saying he's the leader of the gang at some point here. So next question is, it's just all a bit too weird to be Russia using Ukrainian models.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like I say, it's like the plot of Zoolander. And it's like, yeah, these are people who have no known Russian associates, who we are told might have been one way or another directed by Russia to do this, although that doesn't mean the Kremlin was involved. If we are going to run with the idea that these people were recruited, one avenue that I do think is worth looking at is, I believe it was the start of April, there was this teenager in the US called Nikita Kasap, who was this neo-Nazi who killed both of his parents in order to fund this elaborate scheme to assassinate Donald Trump, in the hope it would trigger a race war in the US, because he thought that the white race was under threat, etc. He was in close contact, and there's an FBI affidavit in the public domain proving this. He was being directed in what he was doing by unknown individuals on Telegram with Ukrainian telephone numbers. And they explicitly stated in their communications with Nikita Kasap, the point of this is to blame Russia. So, a very tame explanation for all of this is that these Ukrainians thought that they could do this and Russia would somehow get the blame for it. But, I mean, again, A, that's not been considered by the media, but B as well, I mean, there are so many more effective things that they could have done to try and blame Russia. And where, again, how did the Ukrainians, I'm not just talking about the models, I'm talking about their prospective Ukrainian handlers, how did they get the former license plate and registration of Keir Starmer? How did they get the address of two properties that he used to live in many years ago? You know, it all just really defies sense. And clarity on those very crucial questions is, I think, by design, unforthcoming. I had a sense that we were almost being encouraged to speculate about what was happening because we were being given these scraps of spicy red meat about the case without any real substance or like there at all, and it's still not there almost a month later.
Which leads to this question by Jay: why would they engage in a kamikaze mission that they are ill-equipped to carry out on the Prime Minister of the UK? What are they getting out of this other than a lifetime in prison?
Yeah, the UK prison industrial complex. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, as a prosecutor has said, their conspiracy remains unexplained. And yeah, I mean, it kind of defies rational explanation. It's just like, well, I mean, yes, what would you gain out of doing this. As I say, there are so many more effective things you could do to try and intimidate Starmer. There are so many more effective things you could do to try and blame Russia for this. It is very weird, and it does. And I think that, yeah, there is an element of that that kind of points to this being somehow personal. I'm not sure what form that takes, but, someone had quite clearly an axe to grind with Starmer personally. This wasn't just, random, but I mean, you could throw a Molotov cocktail at the gates outside Downing Street, and leave a Russian flag at the scene. I'm not suggesting anyone should do that, just to be clear, but I'm saying that, if you wanted to stage an attack and try and blame Russia for it, 101 different things that you could try and do on this. Now, another on this subject of what did they expect to happen? What's quite interesting is that the second Ukrainian to be arrested, who is sometimes referred to as a Romanian, even though he's not, and his modeling website profile stated that he was Ukrainian, Nikita Kasa. I've forgotten his name now. It's the guy on the far right of the screen with the kink in his hair.
Roman and Stanislav.
Yeah. I think it was Roman. He effectively got nicked at Luton Airport, where I got detained myself. And he was trying to flee to Romania. Quite clearly they knew the heat was on them. It doesn't seem like the others were attempting to get away with any haste. One might speculate that after the first arrest of the first suspect, that the other two started worrying and that they tried to make evasive maneuvers. But then it's just like, well, if you're going to target the Prime Minister of the UK, it's going to get investigated. As I said previously, that's why it's so weird that this is not being treated as a national security matter. And if you think about throughout the war on terror, MI5 and MI6 cooked up so many fake plots, often using they would have people tortured into giving false information, and then they would bust non-existent plots and claim, oh well, this just shows how threatened we are by terrorism, and this justifies intervention abroad, it justifies civil liberty busting measures at home. But I can't speak to the extent of the police investigation into this, but yes, then they're not treating this as a national security matter. Is that again just a way of trying to diminish attention around this, or is it because the police know that they had some kind of personal beef with Starmer? We just get question after question after question. It doesn't stop, and I might add that the Russian government has now issued a formal statement saying this is complete and utter nonsense, and the British do have a rather strange habit of blaming Russia for everything that goes wrong in their country. Which is a basic statement of fact. They are almost on a par with Jews being blamed for everything in a very conspiratorial, xenophobic way in 19th and early 20th century Europe. Russia is the perfect bogeyman upon which you could pin everything. But the British media seems both eager and reticent to do so at the same time.
Well, Kit, we've got dozens of unanswered questions, which is a testament to how much people are fascinated by this case. We have run out of time. If there are any further developments, we would love to get you back. Like I said, viewers, all of Kit's links are in the description box. I will put them in the live chat again now. And before you go, is there anything you would like to say in conclusion to the people watching this?
Well, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, and Sean appears to have at some points. It would be an honor and a privilege to come back again. If you did ask a question and we didn't have time to answer it, drop me an email, kitclarenberg@protonmail.com, and I'll get back to you. But follow me on Twitter, check out my podcast, Decline and Fall, with my friend Alex Mackay, and you can find my website, kitclarenberg.com, Global Delinquents, shameless plug, I'm afraid, but you can find most of my writing there. So maybe see you again soon. God bless and take care.
All right. Cheers, Kit. You take care as well. I'll
close. Cheers, Sean. Thank you. Take care.
Right. What a fascinating guest, folks. And we have got Ron coming in next, and he's going to be talking about Keir Starmer, the release of Tommy Robinson, and several other contemporary news stories here. We've got Kevin Annette back on Saturday night. Who's more evil, the Mormon Church or the Vatican? Lots of great content coming your way, folks. Some people in the chat noticed Andrew Gall was wishing happy birthday to Jen, my partner. It's Jen's birthday meal is about to start in 30 minutes. So I'm going to have to go and join. But hopefully we'll be back, if anything breaks, on this story mañana. Take care. Thanks for tuning in.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a top-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big.